Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 2, Episode 32. My podcast partner, David Todd, is lost out in Las Vegas somewhere, I think. He deserves the time off. I suspect something similar to the Hangover movie is going on out there somehow. I think I'm just concerned he might be trying to steal a tiger of Mike Tyson's or something like that. But in his place once again, getting a helmet this week on the Terrible Podcast, is Steelers Depot contributor, good buddy of the show, Nick Rakitta. Nick, congratulations on getting another helmet today, and welcome back.
Thanks, Dave. Glad to be back, and I hope David doesn't come back with a little baby named Carlos or something.
Yeah, or one of those tattoos on his face, like Mike Tyson there. But David works hard. He's great at what he does. He deserves the time off, so I'm kind of letting him be this week. He may or may not be back with me Friday. We'll see how the rest of the week plays out there. Nick, let's get right to it. Mike Tomlin held his normal Tuesday with Tomlin press conference yesterday. I think the most important thing first was sort of the injury updates. Troy Polamalu evidently passed his concussion test, and that's good. He looks like he's going to be good to go this week. We'll know more on the injury report when it comes out later today for Wednesday. Doug Legursky looks like he's going to miss several weeks with a dislocated toe. And man, just the offensive line keeps taking these hits. This will be the seventh different combination of an offensive line, starting offensive line this unit against the Cardinals in as many weeks. So not something new to Sean Coogler, who had some issues with Buffalo a few weeks ago. I believe he started seven different combinations of the offensive line as well. Marcus Gilbert, Chris Kimoatu, Jason Worlds, and Mawaldi Moore look like they all could be back this week. I wrote last night that Worlds, it'd be interesting to see if this guy can practice all 3 days this week if he gets to start at right outside linebacker instead of Lawrence Timmons. Mike Wallace has a minor hamstring injury. I cannot see that keeping him out. Aaron Smith, James Harrison, Casey Hampton all look like they are not going to be a go this week. And Chris Hoke is recovering from that stinger still, and the latest report is he still having some problems with it today, so that'll be interesting going forward. Give me kind of your thoughts on these injuries, guys coming back this week, Nick.
Well, first of all, I think everyone's happy that Troy's okay. Having him back, slight concussion is probably the best possible scenario we could have thought for him. So having him on the field is obviously going to be a big upper for the defense. That defensive line's still banged up, and honestly, it might almost be for the best because, we know Casey, what he is, and a big run stuffer there. But let's be honest, him and Hokie are getting up there in age, and it's about that time to start finding their successor. And Steve McClendon is explosive in the middle, and he causes havoc in the backfield sometimes. He can shoot a gap. I think he's got to get maybe a little bigger and a little stronger, but he'll be able to come along there with time and with game preparation and that. So I think that's going to be an upper for the defense as well. Ziggy Hood getting a start over there. I think it's his time anyway. Like we said on the last episode of the podcast, Aaron's time is limited, and he's probably only going to start seeing limited snaps at this point. And it's time for Ziggy to start stepping up anyway. On the offensive line, with Doug Legursky being out, Trey Essex is much more suited to be a guard anyway. I'm not all that comfortable with him playing at all, but I'd much rather have him inside at guard than at tackle, because when he's inside at guard, he doesn't got to worry about his quickness so much and getting beat off the edge. I'm much more comfortable with him there in the middle. And hopefully, if Kimoatu is able to come back, that would be fantastic, but I'm much more comfortable there with Trey on the inside. And like you said, with the skill position guys, not worried about Mike Wallace at all. Little things and bruises and stuff like that, nothing major. Mawaldi Moore coming back. Hopefully he'll be able to get back. He's always good coming out of the backfield on third down and whatnot, and he's a proven veteran. But the other guys that have been filling in for him, like Redmond and Dwyer, and Mendenhall playing well. I'm not too worried about him coming back if he needs to sit down yet another week. And Nathan Worrell's coming in. If he's healthy enough to play, I say give him a shot. I mean, you put him up against a Cardinals team who's average. They're not overly powerful, but bringing him back in maybe at right outside back and putting Lawrence back in the middle where he's comfortable may be the best thing for both of them.
Yeah, I mentioned, I wrote about Worlds last night. It's been laying heavy on my mind. You know, this is a guy, former second-round draft pick. You know, here we are, week seven. Either the guy knows what's going on in the LeBeau defense right now or not. Now, I know a lot of this is predicated on his health, but Tomlin left the door open for him yesterday. You know, not ready to say who's going to start outside, and although he kind of praised Timmons yesterday in the press conference for what he's done, it wasn't actually a glowing endorsement. I mean, I think we all know after these last two games that Timmons in the smallest size, I think we talked about it briefly the other day, that he's just better suited as an inside playmaker there. One note on Kimo Atto, it looks like it's being reported by Dale Lolley that he has a cartilage problem in his knee. I was told last week it's a gout problem, which is arthritic in nature. Kind of playing off of the report that Scott Brown had earlier in the year, that the injury that the knee that has held him out most of the training camp. You know, hopefully this guy can come back and stay healthy. You know, he's great as far as run support, as far as what he can do on pulling to the right side, as is Ligurski. And I'm with you. I mean, Essex is okay, an emergency kind of swing type guy. But Kimo Atu's got to stay healthy, and for some reason, I do not think this is the last game that Kimo Atu has missed this year. But it does look good for him suiting up and playing this week with Ligurski out, so that's good news. The Steelers made a couple of practice squad moves yesterday. They had released the young running back Tristan Davis that they had signed before the Titans game. He was used mostly to emulate Chris Johnson from the Titans before that game. They also released linebacker Morty Ivey. They re-signed DeMond Cromartie-Smith and defensive tackle Elisa Joseph. Those two signings really just tell me Cromartie-Smith is more of a safety valve just in case Troy has some sort of a setback with this concussion. And the Joseph signing is, you know, let's face it, Hoke, there's a possibility that Hoke could miss this game this week with this stinger, and that would leave you down to Ziggy Hood, Steve McClendon, Brett Kiesel, and Cameron Hayward, I believe. Am I missing anybody on the defensive line that's healthy there? I mean, that's it as far as healthy bodies, if I've got this count right, because Casey Hampton will be down. So there's no way I would think they would go into this game with just four healthy bodies. So Hope's condition really bears watching over the rest of this week, and you might have to see them get one of these guys active, one of these defensive ends or defensive tackles active from the practice squad this week.
Yeah, I agree, and I would think they would definitely not go in with anything less than five guys. I don't see how you can, because if one guy goes down, you only have four. You know, you're down to three starters, and then you would have to start bringing in, you know, linebackers to play defensive end or something. But even if the kid that was just signed for the practice squad does get a hat on Sunday, I still don't think he's going to play with the position flexibility that Coach Mitch and all the coaches stress on the defensive line and offensive line. You know, it's all about position flexibility with the Steelers. And at any point, you know, they can swing Ziggy inside. You know, I'm sure Cameron knows how to play the inside a little bit. We know Steve McClendon can play both defensive tackle and defensive end. So either way, if that kid does get a helmet, which you probably will if Hokie's down, the position flexibility is probably not going to allow him to see the field anyway.
Yeah, and we can't forget about Corbin Bryant, who's been on the practice squad, more of a defensive end, 6'4", 300 kid out of Northwestern as well. So, you know, maybe Joseph isn't the guy that gets promoted. Maybe Bryant is you know, he's got more time in that defense being on the practice squad and working on these scout teams. But certainly something we'll be paying attention to on the injury report as the week progresses here. Just keep your fingers crossed that Hoke can be ready, and none of this has to take place, because you don't want these young kids out there taking too many snaps. Something else has kind of cropped up today. I tell you, you never know what you're going to get when you follow the Steelers week to week, for any team for that matter in the NFL. Roethlisberger, in his media session today, he normally speaks to the media on Wednesday, has pretty much come out and said he wants to run the no huddle offense more, and that the idea was shot down during the game against Jacksonville on this past Sunday. And, we just only have a small context of what was said. It'll be more interesting to hear as more of this comes out later today and tomorrow, and the comments by Bruce Arians on Thursday. But give me, Nick, I know you probably read some of my assessments on it and all like that. Give me your honest opinion on this. What does Roethlisberger have a point here, or is this just him wanting to, get more accolades and more respect and vault himself up from maybe a top five quarterback into a top, one or two that's in the conversation? What's your thoughts?
I don't think it's Ben trying to blow himself up. I don't see Ben as that kind of quarterback. I know, obviously he's had these character issues in the past, and people have their own opinions about him. But to me, Ben just doesn't seem like a guy that wants to blow up the stat sheet. It's all about me, and I want to be a superstar and stuff like that. He is Big Ben, but I think he's a team guy, and all he wants to do is be a winner. And, he does run the no huddle very well, let's be honest. When he gets into a rhythm and he gets that defense on their heels and they run that fast-paced no huddle, things seem to click. Now, I don't know if that might be him, wanting to throw the ball a little more, especially with the four dynamic receivers they have and the young, the young speed they have and stuff like that. And with Heath Miller, hitting the seams and hitting those out routes and stuff like that. It might be Ben wanting to just get in the rhythm with those receivers and move the ball down the field. And I don't think it would be a bad thing if he wants to do that, for a couple series. But I don't think sitting there, like Peyton Manning and running the huddle all game long is a Steelers style. You still got to stick to running the football and, pounding on him a little bit. But I think, a couple series a game, a few series a game coming in and running that fast-paced no huddle and getting the defense on their heels and not letting them make substitutions and getting them tired would be a good idea. And I think B.A. knows that, and I think B.A. wants to have as much control of the offense as he can, but he knows Ben Roethlisberger knows the offense. And to have that come in and let them run the no huddle a few times a game, I think it'd be a great idea.
Yeah, and some of the positives from this, as one of his comments, Dale Lally reported that, it gives him a chance to get a quick look at the defense, maybe check out of some things quicker and all like that. It gives them, just more time basically to do this. And I'm, hey, if that's what Ben wants, and I just have a hard time. Let's not blame my view is let's not blame what happened last week on not running no huddle, because Ben missed some wide open receivers. Emmanuel Sanders was on 93.7 yesterday talking about if the game plan changed, if their plan was to stretch the field more yesterday. And he said, no, it really changed based on what the defenses were doing to Mike, or what the Jaguars were doing with Mike Wallace rolling more coverage to his side. And you saw them take shots down the field to Brown and Sanders. The problem is that Ben's accuracy, we still cannot ignore that fact. Now, how much of the wind played a role in that? We don't know. I mean, only Ben knows the answer to that. But if it was, why would he continue running that play, and why would Arians continue to let that happen as well? Now, I know this is going to be fuel on the fire for the Arians haters out there, and maybe it's justified. I guess the only way that we're going to know is to see what happens, and it'll be interesting to hear Arians' rebuttal to this on Thursday. And Ken Laird usually does a good job of having that transcript up on the Trib Live website, so I'll be all over that as well. But, is there some disagreements going on? I think that it happens all the time between a quarterback and an offensive coordinator as far as philosophy goes. My biggest concern, I think, with running no huddle offense is, you got a good chance of catching defenses changing and getting personnel on and off the field. But let's face it, outside of Maurkice Pouncey, this is not the most athletic bunch of linemen that he has. And let me tell you, there were a couple times this past Sunday where they looked gassed in the fourth quarter and they weren't running the no huddle. And you know, Max Starks, you know, his conditioning really, it looked like he was not able to run on the adrenaline that he was against the Titans this past week. So, you know, that would be my concerns. I'm not saying, you know, let's not do it. I'm with you. Let's mix it in a couple of series maybe this week. But it's definitely going to be something to talk about over the next few days.
Yeah, no doubt. And like you said, with the conditioning of these offensive linemen and with not having a consistent, you know, pairing of these five linemen, it's tough to get in a rhythm, especially, you know, in the game. You know, practices are so much different than a game. Anybody can run around and practice and work out and do all they want. But, you know, when you're in a game, you get so much more tired than you ever will during practice or trying to simulate things. And that probably would be a big factor for that offensive line. And going back to Ben's accuracy problems of late, I know people want to get on his case about it. And, you know, some people in Steeler Nation and the media just love to find any possible way to rip on Roethlisberger for some reason. And
and I'm guilty of that too this week. I mean, it really stuck out to me that week, you know, this week. So, continue on. But, I mean, I you can definitely throw me in that crowd against Roethlisberger this week. I think it's warranted. But, you know, is it long-term? We'll see. But continue on.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he has been off the past couple games, and we all know, you know, Ben has a tendency to be inaccurate. If he's going to be inaccurate, it's usually going to be high. He likes to sail the ball sometimes. You don't see many times where Ben's throwing Donovan McNabb worm burners into the ground. Usually if he's missing high or he's missing long, you know, and that's just been Ben's MO over his entire career. Do I think he's an inaccurate quarterback? No, but do I think he's Tom Brady or Peyton Manning? Absolutely not. But, you know, we just got to roll with the punches. And of course, there's going to be disagreements between coaches and players and B.A. and Ben. They're not going to agree on everything. But, you know, such is life in the NFL. And they'll get it worked out. They're professionals. And they're not going to go into the game. You know, Ben's not going to go in wondering if they're going to run the no huddle. And B.A.'s not going to go in wondering if Ben's ticked off about him. They're going to get it settled in practice. And they're going to have a game plan going in. And it's going to unfold on Sunday. And we'll see which side is going to be the winner here.
You know, I think what really is setting up here, though, is if Ben is able to run more of the no huddle this week, and if he continues to I mean, let's face it, we all like what we saw in the Tennessee game. It mixed a little bit of the short intermediate passes with the long stuff late, taking a home run ball to Wallace later. But Jacksonville kind of was taken away this short intermediate stuff this week, and it was leaving the long stuff open. So, you know, if Ben hits on two or three more of those long balls, you know, are we really having this conversation about the offense this week? You know, because, you know, I hate to keep going back to this. I'm a big fan of explosive plays and turnovers. We'll get to the turnovers in a little bit. But that's how these games are won, you know, 20-yard chunks at a time. And of course, as Thomas said, converting the third downs, but, you know, I don't think you need to limit yourself and automatically say, okay, well, we're just going to take the underneath stuff this week and sort of Tom Brady it on down the field, or Drew Brees. You know, I think sometimes you definitely have to take what a defense gives you, but that does not mean that you have to ignore something that's given to you over the top. And with those young receivers that we have and the way they can get separation this past week, it just boiled down to missing these guys. And yeah, the play calling probably a little suspect, maybe in the fourth quarter, loading up on the run a little bit, maybe too much on first down late in the game. I can definitely see some faults there. We talked about that play call, I believe, on third down, you know, trying to run out the clock there at the end before having to punt it back. I mean, you're always going to be able to put a offensive coordinator up underneath the microscope week to week. But I'm not convinced still. You know, people get on me for being an Arians defender all the time, but I'm not convinced that the offensive coordinator is the problem here based on, A, we've won with him before, and he really hasn't, you know, the philosophy really hasn't changed. He did establish the run last week, and the big plays were there. So it's definitely going to be something to talk about this week going forward.
Yeah, I totally agree. And going back to your point about, you know, the opportunities on the deep ball that they're there, the last thing you want to do is deter your quarterback from taking the big play if it's there. You know, Ben, with these receivers he has and Mike Wallace and Antonio Brown, Emmanuel Sanders, the last thing you want to do is say, hey, Ben, let's take the underneath stuff, you know, even if the long ball's open all the time. Let's not take too many shots down the field. I mean, why not? If it's there, it's there. Take it. And, you know, all the plays that he tried to go deep, you know, maybe with an exception of, you know, one or two of them, those plays were there. And bottom line is you've got to capitalize and connect. If you're going to go deep, then, you know, lay that ball out there for Mike Wallace and let him go get it. But, you know, the last thing you want to do is make your quarterback gun-shy. But, you know, I think they'll be just fine. I think Ben's going to get his accuracy issues down. You know, that's something that's fixable. It's not like he's making, you know, terrible reads. You know, he makes some bad ones. He makes some bad decisions. But what quarterback doesn't? So I think the last thing you want to do is sit there and tell your quarterback, you know, don't take so many deep shots if they're there.
Yeah, and real quick, have you had a chance to look at much? I'm going to get into this with Kent Summers here in the second part of this show here. I think from what I've seen from the Cardinals this year is they're very vulnerable in the secondary this year. You got that young kid Patrick Peterson. That's trying to adjust to the 3-4 defense of Ray Horton's. They're going to be without one of their safeties this week, the free safety. They're going to have another young the kid out of Alabama start at free safety this week. They've given up a lot of explosive plays, which I cover in this interview coming up. But is there anything else that you've seen from the Cardinals? Kind of, we'll get more into depth on this on Friday. But any initial thoughts on the Cardinals?
I think almost the exact same thing you think. I mean, they look, they're a young team, and with guys like Patrick Peterson, you know, the young safety, they're going to be aggressive. They're going to want to make plays, and I think you can get them on, you know, maybe some double moves and stuff like that. So you are going to have your chances to connect on the big play, and I think, you know, this is one of those weeks where you definitely don't want your quarterback to be gun-shy, because even with a safety like Adrian Wilson back there, he's a bigger guy. He's more of, you know, an in-the-box type of safety, you know, a strong safety that's going to come up and stick you. And he's not the greatest cover, you know, safety there is out there either. So I think this is now definitely not the week to, you know, pull the reins on Ben a little bit of these receivers. So I think you got to take advantage of that young secondary, you know, especially with Tommy Gladys Cromartie going to the Eagles, losing that speed there, and Patrick Peterson being your number one corner, and he's a rookie. I mean, I think you got to take your shots if they're there.
Yeah, I agree. Now, they got some, you know, some of the extra Clark Hagans and Joey Porter there inside. They're not playing really, really bad as far as that goes. I think Tomlin hit on the recap of the Jaguars game yesterday that, you know, the offense has got to convert third downs. The defense has got to start creating some splash plays. I mean, just two turnovers right now this season is not going to cut it. And, you know, the special teams gaffe, you know, with Monday, the week before he's the hero with the fake punt, the next week, you know, he's wearing the goat tag on him. But I think the call to put on the block there was wrong anyway. Why you set yourself up to let them extend a possession like that, you know, is a topic that's kind of hot this week as well. Any other kind of final thoughts before we get out of here, Nick? First of all, I want to make sure if you're not entered in this contest to win the autographed Super Bowl XL mini helmet by Verron Haynes, I have absolutely nothing to gain by giving this away. He just bestowed the honor on me to give this helmet away. It's a Twitter contest. All you have to do is retweet something I have in this post. Helps raise breast cancer awareness, and one of the sites that is near and dear to the heart of Verron. So, you know, just go to the site or, you know, contact me on Twitter if you need to know how to get entered into this contest. That'll wrap up Thursday at midnight. We'll pick a winner for that. But any final thoughts before we get to the interview with the beat writer here?
Well, one last thing I'd like to throw in is that I think we're getting a little too cute on special teams with our kick returns and punt returns. I know that reverse, you know, last year worked against the Titans, and then they ran the fake maybe, you know, 2 games ago against somebody and it worked. But, you know, they tried to run the fake again with Antonio Brown, Emmanuel Sanders, and I think they're getting a little too hopped up on these reverses and getting a little too cute on special teams and punt returns and such. I think you just got to set Antonio Brown back there, let him catch the ball and let him get up the field a little bit and, you know, say, you know, you can go north and south, go full speed, hit a seam hard and just and take it. No more cute stuff. Let's just try and make a play here.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I really would like to see these turnovers start coming into play by the defense. So I think that can really change a game. Combine those with the explosive plays. That's what it takes to win ball games. All right, Nick, I appreciate your time. You earned your helmet this week. You may earn one on Friday, depending on if we can track down David in Las Vegas. But that's Nick Ricchetta. You can follow him on Twitter, at SteelCityKid117. He does a lot of stuff for me on site at Steelers Depot. Very knowledgeable football fan in general, and I'm always glad to have him sitting in on the Terrible Podcast. Thanks again, Nick.
Thanks, Dave. Always appreciate it.
And you can stay tuned next for the second part of the show and my interview with Kent Summers, the Arizona Cardinals beat writer from the Arizona Republic. Thanks for listening. Welcome back to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. My co-host David Todd is out in Las Vegas this week, so he won't be joining me on this, of course, on this episode. We're pleased, though, to have our sixth different beat writer in for a Steelers opponent this week. We have the pleasure of having Kent Summers from the Arizona Republic, and you can read his work online at azcentral.com. And, Kent, welcome to the Terrible Podcast. Thanks for taking some time with us this morning.
You're welcome. No problem.
Kent, let's just get right to it here. Can you give us an update on the health of the Cardinals overall coming out of the bye?
They're in pretty good shape. You know, they lost Kerry Rhodes in the last game, their free safety, to a broken foot. He's out a month. So Rashad Johnson takes his place. Otherwise, really the only question mark, I think, is going to be tight end Todd Heap, who missed the last game with a hamstring strain. He didn't practice Monday. Ken Wisenhunt said Heap would be kind of a question mark. They would know more today, and so we'll find out in a few hours. But he's really the only question mark. They're in pretty good health, as you would expect, coming out of a bye.
Rashad Johnson getting a start at free safety. He had a pretty good preseason, though, didn't he? Are they going to be losing too much there with him getting a start this week?
Well, he's not a proven guy. This is his third year. He's a third-round pick out of Alabama. He's been a bit of a disappointment over his career. They expected more. This is really the first time he's going to get extended action. So we'll see. He's kind of had a up-and-down career. He's played a lot in nickel situations over the past year. So, you know, it's not Kerry Rhodes was having a decent year, not a Pro Bowl-type year. So, you know, it's not as if they're replacing Polamalu or something. So they should be okay. But, you know, the concern is it's a secondary that's already allowed a lot of big pass plays this year, and then you take away a starting safety. It's a concern, you know, exactly how those guys are going to play now.
You mentioned tight end Todd Heap, too. He's generally had some good games against the Steelers with his time with the Ravens, of course. And it seems like going back and watching some tape that the Cardinals like to go down the seam there with those tight ends. So I would suspect that he would be a key component in this week's game if he's healthy enough to play.
Yeah, he was starting to become a bigger part of this offense when he went down with the hamstring strain in practice. They like their tight ends a lot, and Kevin Cobb likes to throw to them, whether it's Heap in the game or Jeff King, who is really probably their best all-around tight end in terms of blocking. And, you know, they've got a rookie, Rob Housler, a third-round pick. Not a very good blocker, but he runs like a 4.5 40, very fast. And, you know, a couple of times in Minnesota a couple of weeks ago, Kevin Cobb missed him when Housler was wide open, when Housler was playing in Heat's spot. So they're getting him open. They're just not making the plays right now. But, yeah, they do like to go to their tight ends an awful lot.
Yeah, and the Steelers have seemed to have some struggles this year against teams with some good tight ends, starting week one against the Ravens and then the game against the Texans as well. So I see that as being a big component in this week's game. How desperate of a team are the Cardinals right now coming out of this bye week? And do you sense any major changes coming out of this bye?
Well, they're as desperate as you can get. They're 1-4, 3.5 games behind the 49ers in the division, so they know they can't fall any further behind. And they've struggled. They feel like they've played well enough. If a play here, a play there, they could be 4-1. But all losing teams say that kind of thing. They could also be 0-5 if a few breaks don't go their way in the opener against Carolina. They could have easily lost that game. So, yeah, there's definitely a sense of desperation around here that, fans have been critical of almost every component of the team and organization. Ken Whisenhunt's getting more criticism than he ever has in his, in his five seasons here. A lot of people questioning personnel moves. Just everything is under the microscope, obviously, when you start this poorly. So, I think, it's a cliche, but they're really looking at this as a win they absolutely need to get if they're gonna do anything this year.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is a dangerous game with a desperate team like this. And, the Steelers, we don't know who they are just yet through the first six games. We don't know what we're going to get on offense. They're vulnerable against the run as well. You wrote in one of your blog posts an article this week on azcentral.com that quarterback Kevin Cobb in his last three games, his completion percentage has dipped to 57.3%, I believe, and just has one touchdown pass and four interceptions during that span. You kind of mentioned that those are kind of Derek Anderson-type numbers, and also in five games he's fumbled six times. Can you pinpoint anything on these last three games, as far as the completion percentage goes and why the interceptions have kind of creeped in?
Well, I think a couple of those have come, in desperate times when he's tried to make plays. I think the biggest failure on his part and really the team's part has been in two-minute situations. In at least three of those games, the failure to do anything in the final minutes with the ball in their hands has meant defeat to them. It happened in Washington, it happened in Seattle. It's just been a recurring theme. And Cobb's missed some open receivers. He's had people open for long plays and just missed them. Some other factors that go into that. His protection hasn't been very good. They've struggled, especially at left tackle with Levi Brown and right tackle. They've made a change, benching Brandon Keyes and going with Jeremy Bridges. So protection has had something to do with it. He doesn't look real comfortable in this offense yet. He has mobility. He can scramble, but he hasn't gotten a real good feel of when he needs to hang in the pocket and take the hit and make the throw and when he needs to take off and run. I think some of it's to be expected. He's 27 years old, starting an extended amount of time for the first time in his career in a brand new offense with no off season. I think he's going to be a good player, but I also think that, he played much better in the first two, 3 weeks than he has in the last three or so.
Larry Fitzgerald, Mike Tomlin referred to him yesterday in his press conference as pretty much an all universe, one of the best receivers in the league by far. I think that's pretty evident. Former Pitt star. How are teams approaching him this year? A lot of double coverage, from what I've seen, some bracket help over the top and all. Is that what he's seeing? And is he showing any frustration so far?
He's not a guy who's going to show a lot of frustration. There has been a little bit. He's seen probably every type of double coverage that he can. Very seldom in a game is he handled one-on-one. Either they drop a linebacker, flatten the linebacker out to take away the slant, or they bring a safety down to do that.
He almost always has a safety over the top of the cornerback to prevent, you know, throwing that sideline pass where he can use his ball skills and that big, strong body to get the ball over defenders. They're taking that away. They're moving him around a lot, which they've done in the past, trying to take some pressure off. I think if they could consistently hit a tight end, maybe on a seam route, if they could, they've got things open on the opposite side of Fitzgerald with other receivers, and Kevin Cobb has missed it. I think they could do various things to help alleviate the pressure on Fitzgerald. They just haven't been able to make that work. And so teams figure, well, why, you know, it would be silly to take away any resources that we're devoting to stopping Fitz when they can't make a play anywhere else. So that's kind of what he's seeing. He hasn't been real frustrated yet, but, you never know. It could start to percolate.
I'm talking with Kent Summers from the Arizona Republic, longtime beat writer, does a fantastic job. You can follow Kent on Twitter, at Kent Summers, just one word there. Excellent coverage of the Cardinals and has for years. You talked about the offensive line there. The offensive tackles have given up, from what I'm seeing, 9 sacks, 3 quarterback hits, and 36 pressures, and that's probably has a lot to do with what you mentioned with Cobb, especially in the 2-minute offense and all. What do they need to do with that offensive line? I'm sure Russ Grimm has his hands full over there. Is this just a situation like the Steelers are going through where they're just going to have to deal with it and just try to work through it?
Yeah. I think so. I mean, they try to get Levi Brown, their left tackle, help when they can. They've been chipping a lot with the running backs. They've been putting a tight end over there to help him. But, you know, inevitably when you play left tackle in this league, you're going to be left one-on-one at times. And, you know, and you can't lose those battles as often as Levi's been losing them, you know. And certainly it would help if they could do some things to take pressure, you know, to make defensive ends or linebackers think a little bit about, you know, just rushing full speed. This team has struggled mightily in completing a screen pass. They've been wide open, and something seems to always go wrong. Some of those things that they haven't been able to do. But, you know, they struggle, and I think that's part of what has gone into Kevin Cobb's struggles is, he's maybe a little worried about his pass protection at times and isn't sure it's going to hold up long enough for him to deliver the ball.
Beanie Wells has had a pretty decent start to the season despite, the record of the Cardinals to start off. I mean, real powerful runner. Boy, he forget who it was with the Vikings. He dadgum near took his whole helmet off of him there on one of those plays. You know, 4.15 rushing yards per play through these first few games. I suspect this is going to be the game plan going in, is to get Beanie off to a good start, get the tight ends involved in the game, and then take some shots down from downfield to Fitzgerald. Is that pretty much what you see they're going to do this week?
Yeah, through 5 games, they've run the ball as well as they have really in Wisenhunt's 5 seasons here, from the beginning of the game through the end of the game. And, you know, one of the games in which they struggled was the one in Seattle that Beanie missed because of a hamstring strain. He's been very good. This offensive line has run blocked pretty well. They've given him some holes, especially the 3 inside guys. Center Lyle Sinline's probably been their best offensive lineman, and then guards Darren College and Rex Hadnott have been really good. They're you know, especially Hadnott is a physical guy, and you know, and Beanie's just punishing people. He came into the league with a reputation of being soft and not being durable and not playing through injuries. And, you know, he hasn't dispelled any of that yet. But, you know, if he continues to run like he has, he's going to. I mean, he's finishing off runs. And, you know, even when something's not there, he's done a really good job of making something out of nothing. So it's going to be an interesting game from the standpoint of the 2 running backs in this game with Wells and Mendenhall, you know, 2 fairly young guys who have each taken, you know, their share of criticism for various things. But, you know, both guys have been productive lately.
I think the biggest thing that jumped out in the stats, looking at the Cardinals coming into this game, 26 explosive plays through the air on defense. Is this pretty much a benefit? A result of Ray Horton and Deshae Townsend coming over, trying to implement this 3-4 defense with a young cornerback like Patrick Peterson. Have you put your finger on why so many big plays on defense?
Well, I think a couple things. One, and you hit on it, it's two young corners in their first years at starting, and Patrick Peterson and Jefferson. They knew there'd be some struggles there, and they expected more help from their safeties. You know, I think early there were some miscommunications with Adrian Wilson and Kerry Rhodes that didn't help the young corners. It led to big plays. You know, another thing that goes into it is they have a decent amount of sacks, but they don't have that premier pass rusher. They don't have that guy they can count on to come off the edge, especially, and put pressure on the quarterback. They rolled the dice a little bit a year ago in signing Joey Porter, hoping that, you know, at 33 he could give them a little bit. He hasn't. I mean, he took a pay cut before the season. He had only 5 sacks last year, and he hasn't done much this year. You know, and they really struggled. They haven't. They've been trying to implement that Steelers 3-4 scheme, and you know, they've had trouble finding a nose tackle and outside linebackers, you know, probably the two most important positions if you're going to run that defense. And they haven't drafted well at outside linebacker. You know, so I think they're going to start trying to play some young guys. I think you'll see O'Brien Schofield, a fourth-round pick a year ago, come in for Porter or Clark Hagans. I think you could see Sam Acho, a rookie from Texas, do the same thing, at least come in sub-packages and rush the passer.
Just a few more questions before we get you out of here. Has Horton had to scale things back a little bit? I mean, the 3-4, especially that Dick LeBeau runs, I mean, rookies hardly ever hit the field because of the complexities of it. Has he mentioned having to scale things back?
Yeah, no question. You know, I think he tried to implement as much as he could the first 2 weeks. It didn't work. Against Carolina, they gave up a ton of yards through the air. They go to Washington, they get pounded on the ground. At that point, he scaled back, and they were very, very basic in Seattle. And they should have won that game. You know, they really played well enough on defense the last couple games, 3 games maybe, to win. And they have scaled back. But as Horton said, we can't continue the whole season to play as simply as we have on defense. We've got to start doing some other things if we really want to stop people. But it's a difficult scheme to pick up, as you and all your listeners know. And, you know, without the benefit of an off season, it's been even more difficult. But, you know, that said, I think they expected some guys to play better. I think, you know, the two young corners could play better. Adrian Wilson's not having a very good season right now. You know, and they're, like I said before, they're not getting any production out of their outside linebacker spots. I think Horton will start to ease more into the game plan, but, you know, it's gonna be just kind of a test case just to see how much these guys can handle. And, you know, I think he felt like he gave them too much through the preseason, and it sure looked that way through the first 2 weeks. But it's a unit that has played better of late.
Kind of ending on a lighter note here, Steeler Nation likes to refer to the Cardinals, of course, as Pittsburgh West. How does that sit with the fan base over there?
Well, it's the first thing people criticize, especially when it comes to personnel moves. And when, you know, the poor start, you hear it a lot from fans, you know, they need to quit, you know, filling the roster with ex-Steelers and the coaching staff with ex-Steelers and pay more attention to what, you know, a player has left. You know, I don't know that it's – I think it was true for a while that there were a lot of ex-Steelers here, maybe guys at the end of their careers, and certainly Clark Hagans and Joey Porter you could put in that category. But, you know, Hagans has played okay. He still has something left at age 34. Porter's pretty much done. But, you know, Wisenhunt and his Steelers guys are taking a lot of heat here, especially Russ Grimm, their assistant head coach offensive line. You know, that unit has struggled off and on throughout their tenure. You know, they've got some young coaches with Steeler ties. Mike Miller is our offensive coordinator, you know, in his really first year is calling plays. Matt Raich, the linebackers coach. you know, was with the Steelers for a while, and, you know, the outside linebackers aren't developing as quickly as people had hoped. So, yeah, it's not, you know, when Wisenhunt came here, you know, having Steelers connections was a positive thing, and especially, you know, in 2008 when they went to the Super Bowl. But, you know, as they've struggled over the last 2 years, winning just six games last year and early this year, it's something that people bring up as a criticism now.
Has Wisenhunt practiced his handshake this week for the post game? I'm sure. I you know, with all that stuff that went on with Harbaugh and Schwartz, they asked Tomlin yesterday about it, and he said he doesn't practice a handshake. I don't think we have to worry about this week.
And Wisenhunt, I asked him about it Monday after his press conference, and he just kind of smiled and said, you know, it's part of the game. I like the tradition of it. You know, if I get beat, I get beat. The other guy's better that day. I'll shake his hand and I'll have no problem. So Wisenhunt, as people in Pittsburgh knows, is real respectful of the NFL traditions. And, you know, he's not a guy who's going to lose his temper on the sidelines or lose his cool or be over exuberant or show, you know, go in any way going to show disrespect to the other coach. So, yeah, I think this is probably one post-game handshake we all won't have to witness, because I don't think there'll be a problem.
Yeah. Take it easy on Mike Tomlin during his conference call today, too. Now, he had a problem with Jacksonville. Want to talk about games from 4 or 5 years ago, so be careful there. Hey, Kent, we certainly appreciate you taking the time on a terrible podcast this week. Any predictions on this week's game, or are you going to save that for the site later this week?
You know, I'm still a little undecided. I think I'm leaning toward picking the Cardinals, not for any logical reason other than I just think it's an absolute must game for them. I think they know that, and you know, even though there'll be probably a pro Steelers crowd at University of Phoenix Stadium, I think the Cardinals are just due. But you know, I'm probably an idiot for picking them.
This is a day we don't know what Steelers team we're going to get this week, that's for sure. So it wouldn't be an off-the-wall pick. That's Kent Summers from the Arizona Republic, fine beat writer, covered the Cardinals for years. Make sure you check him out online, azcentral.com. Follow him on Twitter, at Kent Summers. Kent, we appreciate you joining us. Thanks for taking the time.
You're welcome.
And that was Kent Summers from the Arizona Republic, the Arizona Cardinals' longtime beat writer, and we appreciate him joining us, taking time out of his busy schedule to join us on a terrible podcast. And that'll wrap up episode 32, season 2 of the Terrible Podcast. Once again, I want to thank Nick Ricchetta for filling in for David Todd for me. Thanks for listening. Please subscribe to iTunes, all the various things. Hit me up on Twitter. You know the deal. Love to hear the feedback. Love the support. Have a good day.